This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. This is Inside Story with Lee Chui Lin. Tonight, a closer look at the culture of bullying in our hospitals after the death of a trainee doctor recently. First, we find out more about what trainee doctors experience and whether this is common behaviour in our hospitals. And then, how can we properly address the culture of workplace bullying in general? So we'd like to hear from you. Have you experienced bullying in your workplace? I mean, how can this be addressed? Call 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:07, and first, I think, to truly understand where all this begins, on April 17th, a trainee doctor died after falling from the residence building of the Penang Hospital. He was actually posted there as a houseman just 2 weeks before on April 4th. And last Friday, Health Minister Khairi Jamaluddin announced the formation of an independent task force to investigate this death, but also the reported prevalence of bullying culture among doctors. This comes after, you know, numerous other stories that have happened through the years and have led really to growing concerns about the work conditions of junior doctors, including events of bullying. So if we look at what numbers we do know, the Malaysian Medical Association has received more than 120 complaints from medical professionals since 2017, including complaints about bullying and work stress. According to MMA President Dr. Koh Ka Chai, 80% of the complaints are from housemen. And a 2021 study also found that at least 1 in 10 Malaysian junior doctors perceive that they're being bullied at work. Medical officers make up the majority of the perpetrators of toxic work environments, followed by nurses and support staff. And if you're wondering what kinds of bullying we're talking about, the more common types include being asked to do work that's below the level of competence, being humiliated or ridiculed, being shouted at, or being the target of spontaneous anger. There have also been other stories emerging. Actually, there are several or plenty of them available on Twitter. But if we look at what's been reported as well, on portals, Dr. Norlela Arifin, Penang State Executive Councillor for Health, said that junior doctors in Malaysian government hospitals are often subject to inhumane working conditions. And several junior doctors spoke to The Star and said that, well, you know, they typically work between 12 to 16 hours, some working up to 100 hours a week. They also undergo a tagging period with each new post where they typically work from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. for 6 days a week, although some are also expected to come into work earlier. Now, this period lasts for 14 days. And the houseman may not get a day off during this time. On-call hours can go up to 36 hours. So there are all these things going on. Some have also reported being ridiculed by their superiors for being unable to handle the working conditions. So as for what people are calling for, Dr. Boy Saidi Abdul Razak, president of the Malaysian Muslim Doctors Organization, said that they are proposing a review of the trainee doctor's internship, a commission under the National Labour Council to ensure that the posting system is actually in line with the Labour Act, a royal commission comprising representatives from agencies outside the Health Ministry to investigate these issues of bullying, and a 24-hour hotline for trainee doctors to report bullying incidents. There have also been calls for therapy and counselling units to be set up in government hospitals for medical officers. So there's a lot of ground to cover in terms of what potential solutions could be. But I think there's also a lot to uncover about what exactly is going on, and, you know, what are these stories that are emerging. So that's actually where we'll be starting, by talking about, you know, what training is like, what kind of experiences do junior doctors go through. After that, though, we're going to talk about workplace bullying as a whole. We'd like to hear from you. Have you experienced bullying in your workplace, and what do you think needs to be done to address this issue? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be speaking with Dr. Tanusha Francis Xavier, medical doctor and co-founder of Parti Muda. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bombing frustrated minds, BFM 89.9.
It is 6:12 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn. We're talking today about the culture of bullying in our hospitals, and this follows the death of a trainee doctor recently, which has also prompted the sharing of a lot of different stories about the experiences that many junior doctors in our hospitals have gone through. So we'd like to hear from you. I mean, what do you think can be done to address this, and have you experienced bullying in your workplace? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now to talk about this is Dr. Tanusha Francis Xavier, medical doctor and co-founder of Pati Muda. Dr. Tanusha, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Lynn. Thank you. Happy to be here.
So firstly, what can you tell us about the training process for young doctors in Malaysia?
Yeah, sure. But before that, I would just like to clarify that I'm not part of the medical system in Malaysia, because obviously I'm in politics. But my mother was a nurse, so I basically grew up with these horror stories. And naturally, all of my friends, best friends and all, are in the system. And to be frank, the injustices that happen in our medical system was actually the primary driving force as to why I joined politics in the first place. So I have plenty to share today. So contrary to popular belief, these issues that are happening in the medical system are not new issues. They have been ongoing for decades, but I believe that social media has been an empowering tool for doctors to come forward anonymously to voice their concerns and the abuses that they have gone through, and even harassment, and all covered up as part of the training process they need to go through.
So we're talking to you today because, you know, recent reports of a houseman's death in Penang have raised concerns over these working conditions, the training conditions. What went through your mind when you first heard the news?
Extreme sadness, of course. But if I can be frank, I was not shocked about it, because the system was already bad to begin with. But the working conditions only got so much worse under COVID, because it was a flawed system already as it was, and then COVID just escalated everything. And it's very, very sad, because yes, I am aware that, you know, the police have not finalized the case, and it's ongoing as to the cause of death and so forth. But this person decided and saw no way out of this and decided to take their life at their place of work. I would find it very, very surprising if there is no correlation between what he went through at work and ultimately why he made that is such a drastic decision. But I was not shocked, very, very sad. And I hope that, you know, MOH and all finally do something about this instead of just dodging around the issues.
So what are the stories that you've actually heard from junior doctors about the training period?
Oh, gosh. When I was a kid, the first story that I heard from one of the doctors who was a colleague of my mother, which was my first exposure to the injustices of the system, she was not allowed to leave to attend her own wedding registration because she's a junior doctor and she can't leave. And basically the superiors, even though she had applied beforehand and all of that, and this is her own wedding. And that is just one example of just the level of abuse that is taken to throwing files at your face, yelling at you in front of patients, things like that. And of course, the most concerning as of late that have been voiced by many junior doctors is sexual harassment. And they feel that they cannot come forward to complain about it, because otherwise they will be retained in their rotation or quite possibly fired, because your superiors have absolute law and control over you. And when I came back to Malaysia after working in South America for some time, and of course, my parents were not too thrilled that I decided not to go and practice as a doctor and instead opt for politics. And, you know, there was some heavy campaigning, you know, why don't you at least give this a few years and then you can decide, until my dad got admitted. And he saw firsthand what doctors gone through. And that was the end. He said, no, don't ever do this. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, he himself had voiced out and advocate to specialists, I don't think this is how you should be talking to your junior doctors in front of a patient. It is that bad, and it is not isolated cases. This is a systemic problem that is happening.
So, you know, part of what we've been seeing, I mean, of course, as you said, there are so many stories being shared on social media, but there's also this undercurrent, right, that, oh, you know, a strict approach is needed because you need to toughen up. This is a tough career and, you know, you need to be prepared for a stressful job. How would you respond to this mindset?
Yeah, I do agree that it is a tough career. And yes, they do need to be strict to ensure that the doctors are properly trained to know how to handle patients and care. But this does not mean that abuse and disrespect can be tolerated. So what, are we going to start rotating doctors who are not up to par or who make mistakes? Yes, you can teach. Yes, you can be strict. But there's a way to go about it. And we can't, you know, disguise all of it in terms of saying that this is a method to toughen them up. What does not, doctors not being allowed to even have a meal the entire day make them a better doctor? That doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
How do we see this type of thinking translate into the work culture overall?
Yeah, it becomes an abusive cycle. And I'm sorry to draw parallels with domestic violence because it can be triggering to some of our listeners, but that is essentially it. So this junior doctors experience years of abuse and public humiliation and being derogated. I have friends whom, you know, their seniors would say something like, oh, you know, why don't you go and take this patient's blood pressure, and at the next minute say, hey, no, you know what, not you, because your Indian face can't probably handle it. And that is just ridiculous thing. So then eventually when these junior doctors become senior doctors and have juniors under them, they repeat the same behavior. And this has been going on for years. And now that is the work culture in hospitals that has become sadly a norm.
Another part of this conversation has been about the working hours, because house officers report working around 12 to 16 hours a day. What implications do these long hours have on the mental health of doctors?
No matter how much one person loves their job, how passionate they are about it, or not even necessarily a job, if you tell someone that you have to sit for 16 hours and watch Netflix and not even be allowed to eat in between or take a break, you will start to hate it. So that is the same way with this. Yes, it was physically demanding one point in time when there were maybe only 50 doctors in the entire countries, in the entire country. But right now, that is not the case. And developing nations have even reduced working days to 4 days a week and even office hours for doctors. But we are so far behind. And of course, the implications to the mental health of doctors who don't even get break, don't even get time with family. Because let's keep in mind, although it is 12 to 16 hours of actual working, this doctors, let's say work starts at 8, they have to go in as early as 5:30 and 6 a.m. to make sure the labs are done, to, you know, draw blood for those, you know, patients who have not been done. And if there's an additional load of patients, they have to handle all of it so that by 8 a.m. everything is like basically done, so that when the specialist comes around and so forth, everything is ready. And when they are done at 10 p.m. at night, for example, they can't leave immediately, because if there's somebody there with seizures or someone that an accident victim that comes in, you can't just say, okay, I'm done and I'm clocking out. You know, and this is just working time. We have not calculated travel time, etc. So essentially, the mental health impact to these doctors is severe, because they have no downtime, no family time, not even time to sleep or get adequate rest. And mind you, for our listeners that are listening, these are the doctors then that have to make life and death decisions for you, calculate your medication dosage for you, perform surgery on you. So this is an issue that needs to be dealt with seriously.
I covered this earlier, but I'm not being a medical doctor myself, I haven't experienced it. There's the tagging period, I believe, at the start of each posting. Can you tell us more about this? Is this a necessary practice?
Yeah, so tagging basically is partnering. And the idea or concept of it is actually very noble, because, you know, a junior doctor, you're coming into the field for the first time. You may not know much. And, you know, maybe you are not comfortable doing certain procedures. You're not used to being in charge of a patient on your own. So you're partnered with a senior doctor who essentially is supposed to show you the ropes, or, you know, make sure that, you know, toughen you up then, if they prefer the term for it. So the idea behind it is actually very good. And it's an excellent learning space for young doctors to learn, make mistakes, be corrected and become better for it. But again, unfortunately, because then these doctors have absolute say of how the doctors perform, and they actually have the say to say that, like, oh no, this person needs to be retained in this rotation for a longer period, and they can do this as many times as they want. So if for whatever reason, if the senior doctor is racist, if the senior doctor is abusive, this young doctor, this junior doctor does not have the space to speak up, because ultimately then they could end up just being trapped there indefinitely, since this superior directly evaluates them.
What mental health support is actually available for doctors at the moment? I mean, is it sufficient?
Well, it exists, just like how even in the education sector, they like to claim that like, oh, mental health counseling exists in all of the schools in Malaysia and so forth. It exists in theory, but it is nowhere near sufficient nor practical. Mental health services, psychiatric facilities in Malaysia are also being run by doctors. And anyone who has had to help a family member get mental health help in Malaysia knows just how overwhelmed and overburdened psychiatric facilities in Malaysia is. So does it exist? Yes. Is it sufficient? No. And again, you can't put a person to work 16 hours or even up to 20 hours of work and all that. I have had friends who have crashed on their way back. And mind you, this working hours is applicable to all, including pregnant women and so forth and all of that. You can't then say like, okay, you know, do all of this, don't have time to eat. There's no Raya holiday for you. If your parents are sick, you can't take leave to go and visit them. Oh, but you know what? We would give you counseling so you can cope. That is just preposterous. And I also want to add that, you know, there's like a lot of that I've noticed that some have raised and said like, oh, you know what? Abuses and injustices exist in all careers, in different fields. It's not just medicine. It's definitely just not for doctors. Yes, that is true. But keep in mind that these doctors do not have an alternative, not even to work in the private sector, because this tagging process is compulsory for all in Malaysia. You can't just, you know, say, like, okay, I don't want to do this and go to the private sector. And what other career options are there? It's not like you can switch to a different company and have a better quality of life. This is all that they have, do or die, essentially. So that is why it's so important that it has to be addressed, because these doctors really don't have a way out.
So what initiatives would you like to see then in terms of, I guess, offering more support to our junior doctors?
Okay, in terms of initiatives and what can be done, this has to be a systemic change. One of the major issues that has escalated all of this is the contract doctor systems. For the listeners who are not familiar with it, basically, on top of all of these issues and injustices that are happening to junior doctors, given that essentially the government does not have the funding or the budget to hire all of these doctors permanently, even though clearly there is a need for more doctors due to our growing population and the long waiting hours in hospital. But, you know, just because of budgetary issues and they don't have enough placements and so forth, they have come up with this contract system. So on top of this, these doctors have to deal with the fact that they may not have a job 4 or 5 years down the road when they complete their training. And again, like I've mentioned, it's not like there are much alternative employment for these young doctors. So on top of everything, there is this job insecurity that they have to deal with, which translates to them not being able to or not wanting to get car loans, housing loans, get married, because you do not know if your future is certain. And for those of you who are able to migrate, at the end of the day, it is us Malaysians, the ordinary people, who are going to lose out, because there is going to come a time where there are going to be so few doctors in our country that we are all are going to be forced to, you know, go to private doctors for our healthcare and have to cough it out of our pocket. It's the ordinary Malaysians that lose. So what can be done about this? Firstly, an entire systemic change. To be frank, the government, MOH, JPA, the finance ministry, whomever is it that is going to find out the financial implications of this and how to go about it, they need to stop dodging around it. Yes, it's going to be perhaps a billion ringgit involvement of thing to upgrade the facilities and so forth. But it is not possible to dance around this issue anymore. The contract system does not work. It is very unfair to doctors. It is very unfair to ordinary Malaysians who are seeking healthcare and deserve quality healthcare. If there is any investment that our taxpayer money should be put towards, and we learned that difficult lesson during COVID, it is healthcare. So that would be the first one, an entire systemic change. Secondly, more obvious and more doable, a secure feedback mechanism. Yes, it exists now where junior doctors can give feedback to the seniors who oversee them, but the feedback goes to the seniors. So which employee is going to criticize the boss when the boss is going to read the evaluation? So that is ridiculous. If there is going to be a feedback mechanism and an opportunity for junior doctors to evaluate their evaluators, it needs to be centralized and only be accessible by MOH. That way, abuses can be identified and dealt with. And thirdly, like I have mentioned that like developing nations are slowly progressing to, you know, office hours or shorter work weeks and so forth. And at the end of the day, it's going to be a win-win for the doctors and also for ordinary Malaysians who can then like get proper quality care from doctors. So these are some of my suggestions. And also from us in MUDA, because I don't want to just come on here and, you know, give a bunch of suggestions and not do anything about it. So from us in MUDA, one of the co-founders, my colleague in MUDA, Dr. Madan, whom has actually been working on this for a while with other doctors and so forth, he's going to put forward a survey, an anonymous survey, because one of the biggest sort of like cover-up that is happening now is that like, oh, you know, this is exaggerated. This is just a handful of black sheep that are causing this. It's not all doctors are doing this. So you know what? We're going to deal with this head on. He is going to launch an anonymous survey for all of the doctors, and we're going to figure out like, you know, a feedback on their mental health status, on if they have ever experienced abuse in during their training and so forth. A very simple, straight up survey. And then we are going to like publish it, and then everyone can see once and for all the realities of what it's like to be a junior doctor in Malaysia.
Dr. Tanusha, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you very much for having me, Lynn, and thank you for giving junior doctors an opportunity to be heard.
That was Dr. Tanusha Francis Xavier, medical doctor and co-founder of Parti MUDA. We'd like to hear from you. We're talking today about the culture of bullying that takes place in our hospitals, and what do we need to do to address this? And have you experienced bullying in your workplace? Share your thoughts with us. We'll be back for your messages after this. It's Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:38. You're listening to Inside Story with Lynn, and we're talking today about the culture of bullying in our hospitals following the death of a trainee doctor recently. So we started the show by finding out more about the experiences, the stories that are emerging from our hospitals. We are just about to talk more broadly about the culture of workplace bullying, but we'd like to hear from you. I mean, what do you think needs to be done to address this? And have you experienced bullying in your workplace? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We have some messages. Actually, we have a very large number of messages with a lot of thoughts on this. Let's start with Dr. Jag, who says, the problem of junior doctor bullying can't be addressed without including the Ministry of Higher Education. Poor quality universities are approved for medical education without being checked. They produce poor quality doctors who now the Ministry of Health has to absorb. The responsibility of education and qualifying the junior doctors are then shoved to the junior specialists, and that's where the vicious cycle of bullying starts. The specialists are clinicians and not educators, and there's frustration there. I also forgot to mention that the culture of bullying also affects senior doctors on their specialising process. It's not just housemen and junior doctors. The whole career path of doctors in Malaysia is thick with the culture of bullying, and at all levels, there are no paths to send in complaints or feedback without jeopardizing your career. And thank you very much for sharing that perspective. I think actually the point that's being made repeatedly is that there is a system problem. There is a systemic problem. For example, Anonymous says, I'm a soon-to-be healthcare worker, a physiotherapist, in my late 30s, and in 4 years, I will be in the system, not in Malaysia, thankfully. All the horror stories in the healthcare system aren't new to me, but I also think that it could be regulated, like in the NHS. There are mandates and all that. Potential students applying to healthcare programs go through stringent processes. I don't know. I don't have a solution for a broken system. I hope to see some changes, though, but I think it all starts in education. We also have Saidi, who says one form of bullying is at the organization level itself, when our government hospitals even officially task our MOs with being on call to the extent of more than 30 hours straight. I have two daughters working as MOs with government hospitals, and it's common for them to have to do 5 to 7 on calls in a month. Is this not an institutionalized form of bullying? Ironically, doctors advocate a healthy lifestyle, but they run unhealthy career lives. And these are all, I mean, just hearing it actually is incredibly stressful, and I feel so sorry for our medical professionals who do such important work going through this. Now, on the subject of work bullying, which is going to be our next segment, Ravin says, work bullying is real and it happens. It's time to stop future victims by speaking up. All those who can must do it. It also happened to me as a senior employee, not to find the abusers in the past, but to put processes to prevent future victims. And this is part of what we're going to be focusing on next as we turn to the discussion on workplace bullying with Amelia Sharif, managing partner at Speak Up Malaysia. Amelia, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So, in your experience, how big an issue is workplace bullying in Malaysia?
In my experience, bullying is a major concern in Malaysian workplaces. Bullying exists in a majority of the organization, either the ones that I've worked with directly or we've gotten DMs, stories, emails from people asking for advice. And these cases ranges, across various industries, both in the public and the private sector. So now we're talking about hospitals and doctors and people in the medical field. But it's also a good opportunity to revisit some of other workplace cases, that we've had involving bullying, right? There are so many glorified cases of bullying in other professions as well. And I think it's about time that we talk about these things. If you look at social media, you hear lawyers, commenting and talking about similar cases, for example. So I don't think that this is, a one-off situation. It has happened for so long. And what's lacking is just that we have not gotten around to doing something about it that can effectively target the structures and the systems that are allowing this to take place. In my experience, Lynn, usually bullying is either a primary issue in the workplace or it's something that we call a secondary issue. What's the difference between these two? If it's a primary issue, it means that bullying itself exists as a culture. It becomes normalized. For example, harsh working condition, a culture of bullying or yelling becomes a test of competency or of worthiness, right? As to whether or not you can make it in a certain field of work or whether or not you get promoted to a certain position. And these harsh working conditions doesn't just, come in the form of extra or long hours. It also comes in a very psychological type of abuse, yelling, cursing, inflammatory or triggering language, using very demeaning or undignified treatment as part of disciplining method, for example. So all of these are examples of bullying that exists as a primary issue. But bullying in the workplace also exists as a secondary issue. Secondary doesn't mean it's less serious, but it means that it actually exists because there are other issues that happens in the first place, and bullying becomes sort of like something that happened, a corollary or as a tool that some people use to deal with the primary issue that they were dealing with. For example, in a lot of harassment or sexual harassment cases, we see bullying is used as a method to silence victims or a method of victimization or a punishment for behaviors that are not approved of, for example, right? So these are instances where bullying becomes a secondary issue that comes along in the workplace because bosses, managers are not equipped with the right tools to mentor, to guide, to support, and more importantly, to discipline and enforce quality of performance and things like that in the workplace.
I wanted to pick up on that because my next question is, I think it's an oversimplification, but I don't know how else to ask it. What are the main factors that lead to incidents of workplace bullying?
I would say the main factor would be toxic leadership practices. What do I mean by this? In a lot of organizations, whether you go to an MNC, a GLC, an SME in private, public sector, any industry, there exists a commonality, and that is the need to enforce, the need to teach, the need to mentor, as well as, and enforce standards, right, in the way that work is done. So when leadership does not know how to do this effectively, it becomes a problem of bullying. I also don't want to simplify it, but the easiest analogy that I can think of is like parenting, right? If you don't know, if you don't have the tools as a parent to discipline your kids, for example, you resort to yelling, you resort to corporal punishment, for example. It's the same in the workplace. When bosses and leaders don't have the right tools to use, they do something that is most instinctive to them, i.e., to let go or to show their frustrations and their anger without any filter, without, trying to make sure that it is sort of like converted into something that is more productive. So I would say when leadership does not have the right tools, they don't know how to become a good support system to, you know, to support the learning and, you know, and the sharing of experience and all that, it becomes bullying. But secondly, it's also an issue of high power distance. Malaysia is a country with, you know, the highest power distance in the world, last I checked. What it means is that people in decision-making positions impose decisions, impose cultures, impose practices onto the people that, you know, that report to them, right? And as a result, people who are their subordinates also feel like they can't speak up, they can't say anything. If they're unhappy, if they're really tired, if working 12 to 16 hours a day for 2 years straight is something that they have to do and they can't complain about, then it becomes something that they can't say anything in an organization with high power distance, right? It also becomes worse in a situation where there is very, very unclear code of conduct or code of ethics in terms of how these things can be dealt with. And finally, when there's no reporting mechanism, or in some cases that I've worked with, there are reporting mechanism, but the reporting mechanism doesn't classify bullying as a form of wrongdoing in the workplace, right? A lot of organizations also glorify bosses who bully, for example, oh, this person is so tough, or they're so great. You know, it becomes something that is glorified in the workplace, right? So I think when all of these things are combined, then they contribute to a culture of bullying in the workplace.
So if we look at some of the comments coming from hospitals, right, some of the more common refrains are, you know, tough treatment is to weed out the weak. This is just how it's always been done. If I went through it in the past, so can you. Or I'm being tough on you because you need motivation. You know, how would you respond to these sorts of comments or this mindset?
Oh, gosh, I've heard this so many times. I think the first thing I usually say is that kind of mindset is extremely outdated. Why is it outdated? That kind of treatment or mindset or attitude used to exist in a world where there is a complete separation between human rights principles or social justice principle in the context of the workplace, or be it corporate or otherwise, right? But in this era, we live in a world where we're trying to integrate these principles of dignified treatment of human rights and all that in the workplace. So for those people who say that, you know, it has happened for so long, we've practiced it, I was treated this way, it means that there's no ability or willingness to deviate from, you know, old practices that have been proven to not just be bad, but if you were to look at it from a business-oriented point of view, it is extremely, extremely costly. Because when organizations fail to treat their employees with a sense of dignity, with a sense of respect, it actually costs them money. When people are not happy, they have mental health issues affect their productivity. When they have productivity, they might, you know, either not perform at work, or there's a high rate of people leaving the organization, which would increase cost in hiring, cost in recruitment, cost in retraining the new people that you recruit. So this is something that bosses, employers have to take into account. If you don't tackle bullying, it's not just that it's bad for your employees, it's bad for you, it's bad for your bottom line. And ultimately, it is something that sort of like impacts every aspect of the work that they are supposed to, you know, they're supposed to work with. So my best advice in this situation for employers and organization is to make sure you truly understand how to enforce reward for good performance, and how do you enforce ownership and accountability for, you know, performances that are below your expectations. If you have this put in place in the workplace, you can see people who maybe they don't perform, you know, maybe they make a mistake, are being treated in a way where you can actually improve on those mistakes instead of just making them a lot more stressed out than they already are. You know, especially in the healthcare industry, when you make a mistake, like it costs people life, you know, it could become a situation of life and death. And that guilt is already so much to handle for any human being. So you compounded on that with bullying, making them feel a lot worse about themselves, making them feel like less of a human being. You treat them like second-class citizens. So, of course, all of this will contribute to the problem of mental health in the workplace.
We're speaking today with Amelia Sharif, Managing Partner at Speak Up Malaysia. We're going to continue our conversation on workplace bullying after this. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bigotry Free Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
It is 6:52. You're listening to Inside Story with Lynn. We're talking today about workplace bullying. As I guess, part of this larger umbrella of the story of bullying in hospitals when our doctors are in training. Keep those thoughts coming. And now we're continuing our conversation with Emilia Sharif, Managing Partner at Speak Up Malaysia. You know, Emilia, if you're working in a culture in which this is prevalent, right, it might start to feel like you're the problem, not the organization, because everyone else is fine. So why are you feeling this way? How can one identify when interactions are actually bullying, not just friendly teasing or part of the usual training?
Before I go to ways to identify, I want to just impress on how important what you just said, Lynn. It's about when you are being bullied, you are made to feel like you are the problem and not the organization. The reason is that bullying has a very unique way of making you feel alone and isolating you from your support system. So when you are made to feel really bad about yourselves, it impacts on your mental health. You feel embarrassed about your work performance, for example. So all of this thing discourages you from actually seeking help, from talking to maybe your colleagues and ask, hey, you did a similar mistake in the past. How did you deal with it? How did you learn? How did you improve, right? So because it shuts you off from the rest of your support system that could potentially exist in the context of the workplace, you oftentimes will feel like you are the problem and it is not the boss's problem, right? Also because bullying sometimes is coupled a lot of the times with things like favoritism. It's because, you know, bosses who bully or tend to have bullying type practices to enforce standards and performance, for example, they often have to go to the opposite end of treating someone really well to show that I am not an evil boss. If you do well, I will treat you well. So, you know, all of this perpetuate, you know, what you just said. And that is actually a very important analysis when you talk about workplace bullying. But to answer your second question, how do you identify? Honestly, bullying is really hard because different people respond to things differently. Different people have different sense of boundaries. I might be okay with something, you might not be, right? But the bottom line is this: when something makes you feel hurt, isolated, or it makes you feel really, really intimidated, embarrassed to just exist in the space of the work, and it leads to things like, you know, you're demotivated and all that, chances are that you are being bullied, you know, amongst other things that could go wrong in the workplace, right? So my best advice usually for people who are wondering if they are being bullied is to trust that instinct, because we don't feel bad out of nothing. Like, usually there is a trigger. You can identify that trigger first. Why are you feeling bad? And then look at the trigger and see if it is something that is within your control, not within your control. If it's not within your control, is it, you know, is it a treatment by another person? Are other people treated the same way? And then you sort of like need to unpack it from there. It could be a situation where a group of people is being bullied at the same time, right? And if you still have trouble or difficulty identifying it, I strongly suggest talk to, you know, a professional about it. Talk to someone that can help you unpack why you're feeling a certain way. But for me, trust your gut, trust your feelings. I think that's the most important thing, because as a human being, we are wired to self-preserve. So when your body and your mind is telling you that something is wrong, trust it and explore, take it from there. Don't ignore it.
We have, you know, a couple of minutes left with you. I wanted to close off on two things. So if you're being bullied at work, what should you do? And from an organizational standpoint, how can this be addressed?
If you're being bullied, number one, talk to someone about it. It could be a colleague. If you don't have anyone that you trust in the workplace, talk to someone outside of the workplace. Talking to someone is really important because it provides clarity as to what you're going through. And you can then from there on strategize what you want to do about it. You can either report to a grievance mechanism. You can report to the whistleblowing mechanism. If you don't have faith in that organization at all, unfortunately, it may mean you might want to, you know, seek a different opportunity and things like that, right? There's no one shoe fits all type of solution here, but I do suggest that you first find someone that you can talk it out with, because that's usually the most important first step. If you are an employer, what you should do is listen. We talk about this as the speak up culture, right? So how do you create a speak up culture? You need to create an environment where people feel safe to speak, safe to complain, safe to share their thoughts, feelings, and ideas. And when they share, someone should listen and take those things seriously. A lot of organizations in Malaysia that I work with is still stuck at encouraging employees to speak, and then it stops there. once employee speaks, leaders don't take it seriously, no action coming from there and things like that. So that deteriorates trust, right? So there must be the portion where you encourage people to speak. There must be the portion where people are willing to listen, take it seriously, take the necessary action, put in place policy, put in place a trustworthy reporting system, a trustworthy counseling system, for example, and then you address it through prevention, like training and making sure people have the right tools, especially if they're bosses. They know how to train, they know how to mentor, they know how to discipline and all that. So if you are able to cover all of this, I do feel that you can reduce workplace bullying bit by bit, because it is a culture issue, so it's quite hard to address. But I do think that's where you should start.
Emilia, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.
That was Emilia Sharif, Managing Partner at Speak Up Malaysia, talking about essentially workplace bullying and how to address what is really a very serious issue. We're talking about this in the context, of course, of the culture of bullying in hospitals, following on a trainee doctor dying after falling from the residence building of the Penang Hospital last month. We'd like to hear from you. What needs to be done to address this? And have you experienced bullying in your workplace? We still have so many messages coming in. Keep them coming. You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. You've been listening to Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.